You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are coming to our last conversation on the book. We'll talk more with Benjamin Clogy. We've been talking about portraits in American Lutheran sacred music with Benjamin Clogy, and we're gonna wrap up our discussion of some of the topics in the book. But I think we'll talk some more with Benjamin about this topic in general, because it's just so fascinating. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University Irvine. You can learn more about Concordia University Irvine by visiting cui.edu. Joining us today, Benjamin Clogy, church organist and musicologist, author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847 to 1947, from Concordia Publishing House. Benjamin, welcome back.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
All right. This is fun. We've talked about Walther quite a bit in our conversations, and we mentioned Lochner in a previous episode when we talked about him and a little bit of his work. Today, we get to dig into his story a little bit more. What brought Lochner and his family to the United States?
Yeah, that's a good question. And maybe I should just preface that by giving just a little bit of biographical overview of who Friedrich Lochner was, because most people do not know who he was. He's not a household name. And actually, my book is structured not on topics, but around people. That's why I call it portraits. They're biographies of these people, among whom Friedrich is one. And I called it portraits because I wanted to have portraits of them, pictures of them, because I think that's important when I talk about their lives, which I did. I found portraits of all of them except for Friedrich Winter. But Lochner, he's not a household name, but he's really important. He was one of the missionaries who came to America, sent by Wilhelm Leah, sent a lot of missionaries over here. He was one of the founding fathers of the LCMS. He participated in organizational meetings in 1847. He was a longtime pastor at Trinity, Milwaukee, and later taught liturgics, sort of, at the Springfield Seminary. They didn't call it that at the time, but he really did. He wrote a very famous book. Well, it was famous if you were a Lutheran pastor in the early 20th century, called Der Hauptgottesdienst, which unfortunately was all but forgotten until CPH published an English translation of it by Matthew Carver. Just did a great job. And so now we have it, a very important book on how to do the liturgy, how to sing the liturgy, how to lead the liturgy. And I like to talk about him because he represents one of the links from the Missouri Synod back to European German Lutheranism, and hence to Luther himself. And so I think the purpose of writing this book was to clarify why these links are important for us to understand even today. But to answer your question about Lochner's background, he was born in 1822 in Nuremberg. He descended from generations of Lutheran clergy, including at least one hymn writer. His name was Carl Friedrich Lochner. He lived in the 17th century, and he wrote one hymn that was translated in English. It's the Lutheran hymnal 404. Probably nobody knows what that is, but I had to look it up too. It's called Soul, What Return Has God Thy Savior? It didn't make it into LSB or Lutheran Worship or LBW, but that was an ancestor of Friedrich Lochner. Lochner's father was actually a copper plate printer. I think the point, I'm not terribly sure what this job entails, but it sounds dangerous, and it also sounds very creative, because you could do engravings and just wonderful things. And so his father was creative from a visual arts point of view, and this influence Lochner. As a child, he studied organ, but then his father sent him to study copper plate engraving. And interestingly, Lochner's teacher, his teacher of copper plate engraving, began his studio each day with devotions and singing of a hymn. So I want to read, I have a quote in my book that I want to read, which Friedrich Lochner, he recalled his childhood, how important this was. He said, quote, "Since our teacher in art had the custom of reading a hymn from the Gesangbuch during the daily devotion, I thus became acquainted with the best hymns in their original form. Heretofore, these hymns had been wholly unknown to me, as I had seen only the rationalist Bavarian hymn book and memorized 60 of its hymns during my school days. How amazed was I at the contrast! How did those hymns refresh me? How anxious was I to memorize one hymn after the other? Since the hymn book in question also contained biographical notes on the poets, I was interested to learn something about them and the origin of the hymns. From that time dates my love for hymnological studies. I also became acquainted for the first time with the almost unknown rhythmical singing process through the organist and precentor at the local church. I think this is important. You can unpack this in all sorts of ways, but you can say Lochner was riveted by authentic Lutheran hymnody, hymns that were taken from the old hymnals that were not rationalist influence, from the rhythmic tunes that weren't rationalist influence. And he did as a child, you know, from his family to his apprenticeship. Hymnody and singing was just an integral part of that. It was something that he lived. I mean, he says that he memorized all these hymns, 60 hymns. I mean, he must have been a great confirmation student. I mean, he was really the overachiever. But also, this shows his interest in hymnology. And hymnology, as opposed to, say, composition or something, hymnology is the study, the scientific, historical study of hymnody. The authors, the composers, their life stories, how everybody interacted, how this hymn developed through the years. That's what we call hymnology. And certainly Friedrich Lochner was, after Walter, certainly the first hymnologist of the LCMS.
I think we need a quick review before we go more into hymnology, which sounds amazing. a quick just overview of Pietism and rationalism and how that was influencing, because you mentioned that he memorized rationalist hymns and the Lutheran hymns he thought were better. What the Pietist and rationalist influence were in church music at that time?
Wow, that's a question one has written books about. It is a great question.
Let's see if I can summarize it.
So Pietism came first. You had the Orthodox Lutheran hymns of the 16th century, Luther, Spiratus. Then you began to have historical forces that interacted with hymnody. So, for example, think of Paul Gerhardt. He was one of the first great hymn writers, and he was the first to begin to put hymns in first person. You know, how Christ does, how he works in my life. That's why you read and sing Paul Gerhardt's hymns and they touch your heart. You know, they're emotional. They're not just subjective, but they never stray far from long gospel, the catechism. You know, they just imbue a little bit of emotion in there. But we move a little bit beyond Gerhardt and we begin to see Pietism become a focus on the inward person rather than the objective, what Christ has done for us. It becomes more on my response. Think of Methodist hymns. And this is very much, you know, John Wesley had the Aldersgate experience where his heart was strangely warmed, he said. Well, that's a very good description of Pietism. You know, the Pietist hymn writers, it got to a point where they were writing to warm your heart. That was the first goal. And that's removed from Orthodox Lutheran hymnody, which seeks to proclaim long gospel in a very clear way. So we move to that. And then, of course, we had rationalism, which there are great historical forces involved with that. You think of the French Revolution, the rationalists there, they turned the great churches and Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris into temple of reason and all manner of horrific things so that they could say, okay, humanity, we are the most important. We have control of our destiny. We do not need God. These stories in the Bible are mythological. And of course, there is a whole body of literature written about this. And of course, the question then is, how does that influence the church? Because if you're a priest, say in Paris, or a pastor in Germany, well, you're not going to be an atheist. You have a church perspective, but how does that affect you? And what happened was that sermons and hymns became more moralistic. They taught you how to lead your life. You know, maybe examples of going into politics, you know, they're just very practically oriented liturgy. And I have examples of that. People have written articles. In fact, I have too. I wrote one on Fitman for the Concordia Historical Institute quarterly where I examined his Confessions of Sin the rationalist confessions of sin really acknowledge no sin. Rationalism didn't acknowledge I am sinful and unclean by nature. To the rationalist, sin was a mistake. You just made a mistake and fixed it. So preaching and hymnody was all about not making that mistake. That's very oversimplifying the case, but that's what the Lutherans left in Germany to escape that so that they could preach more authentically.
We're talking with Benjamin Clogy, church organist, musicologist, author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847 to 1947. I have a million questions, and we don't have enough time to answer all them, but we're going to talk more about Friedrich Lochner and his family in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Concordia University Irvine, you have the freedom to explore your future and your faith. Across over 60 on-campus and online programs, you'll experience Christian education that's uniquely designed to develop the whole person, to prepare you not just for your career, but for all of your callings in life. Here you'll explore life's toughest questions, gain lifelong skills, and make relationships that last a lifetime. Concordia University Irvine. Learn more at cui.edu.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We are talking with Benjamin Clogy, church organist and musicologist, author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847-1947. Today's topic, Friedrich Lochner and his family and the work that he did as a pastor and his involvement in the formation of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, what we call now the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. So let's talk about, before we get into much of his work, let's talk about his formation as a church worker. What do we know about that?
So he was trained as a pastor in Germany with Wilhelm Lea. Probably didn't spend much time with him. He also studied, as part of his pastoral studies that involved music, he studied organ in Nuremberg with actually a fairly eminent organist that I talk about in my book. So he was trained as a pastor and as a musician. And I mentioned his background in visual arts. He painted and drew pictures through his entire life, many of which are in the Concordia Historical Institute down in St. Louis. Very lovely paintings. He was a very creative person. But he came to America in 1844. He was only ordained then. He visited C.F.W. Walter. He found himself in a like mind with Walter, so much so, in fact, that he actually married Walter's sister-in-law, Lydia Bunger. They courted for a couple days, and then they got married. Unfortunately, she died only a couple years later. But Lochner served a church in Pleasant Ridge and Edwardsville, Illinois, and he planted some additional churches elsewhere. But it wasn't until he was called to Trinity, Milwaukee in 1850 where his career really began. But interestingly, he was very missional-minded. He developed a knowledge, a preaching knowledge, he called it, of the Chippewa dialect so he could minister to the local tribes. So he had vast interests from native languages to painting to music to theology and liturgy. But if I might, I'd like to talk about his partnership with his musician at Trinity, Milwaukee. It kind of paints a really good picture of his life. And so I mentioned that Friedrich Lochner was called to Trinity, Milwaukee in 1850. In 1852, the congregation called a parish teacher / cantor to be in charge of the music. This fellow, his name is Christian Dietz. I talk a bit about him in my book, although we don't know a lot about him. He was imported from Germany, and he was highly trained. He had received a Master of the Organ Prize from wherever he studied, and I go a little bit about that in the book. But both of them, I suspect that Lochner handpicked this fellow, and knowing how well Lochner could manage things politically, got his congregation to decide that this was the great guy, the greatest guy for them. And it was their idea, not his. But these fellows worked together so well for many years. Lochner charged Dietz with Lutheranizing the music at Trinity, Milwaukee. So before Dietz came, those 2 years, Lochner lamented that the congregation sang slowly with no rhythm. There were these long organ interludes that the organist would play between stanzas, which Walter hated too, and outlawed at Trinity St. Louis, but they continued in Milwaukee. Everything was slow. He was just unhappy. So it was Dietz's job to teach real Lutheran singing. And that's what he did. And he did it by teaching the rhythmic versions of the chorales in classes. Lochner would teach the hymns in Bible studies and in congregational meetings. And at this time, they had congregational meetings like every Sunday. If there was some decision to be made, they would hold congregational meeting. So that was actually a really good venue into which to introduce these hymns. So they actually introduced the hymns in Wednesday liturgies, Wednesday nights, and they both the pastor and the cantor communicated to the congregation that this was a temporary change. They were just going to explore using these old rhythmic forms. And of course, Dietz started to omit the excess organ playing, the interludes between verses and stanzas. He'd be very deliberate. He increased the tempo of these hymns. So in conjunction with the pastor's teaching, they, like Walter in St. Louis, who would hold Singstunde on Thursday and Friday nights, they did the same thing, except in Milwaukee, they were on Sunday nights. So by 1855, so this is about 2-3 years later, the congregation decided that they would make the singing of rhythmic chorales permanent. And so I like to think by that time, Lochner had been there 5 years, but he had waited patiently. He'd worked carefully, deliberately, and pastorally with his musician. And he really must have exercised great wisdom in order to bring about this return to hymn singing, this Lutheranizing the singing. There's a story of the Dietz didn't stay as an organist for very long, although he stayed as teacher. But older parishioners would tell the tale that when the tempo wanted to drag on the hymns, Lochner scurried out of the sacristy and came to the organist's aid by swinging his baton in tempo. So this was really important to them. And I think that Friedrich Lochner, with his musician Christian Dietz, demonstrates a way of the cantor and pastor working together for the good of the congregation. It's just an excellent story that applies to today, I think.
That is an excellent story. I mean, that sounds very similar to just how I've witnessed liturgy and hymnody changes happen in other churches. It's a process, a pastoral process. Why was that pace significant to those changes? Why was that pace significant? Did it happen in other places?
I tell the story in my book of an example of a pastor who took the opposite approach. And this was actually closer to you in Missouri. And he decided he was going to sing the hymns his way. And he cut the organist off. He gave the organist no say. Actually, if I recall the story correctly, you'll have to consult my book if you want the accurate story. As I recall, he went and got signatures from many of the congregation that they would agree to or wanted. I suspect they were strong-armed to sign this, that they wanted this new way of singing. And the organist was left out of this, had no discussion in it. And he introduced it from one Sunday to the next, and it was an utter failure in every way. The congregation hated it. They did not sing Lutheran hymns rhythmically until many, many years later. Everybody was angry. And so I think you can look at Friedrich Lochner and say, this is how you handle change. You go slowly. And these Lutherans back then didn't like change any more than the Lutherans. Anybody like change now. And he had to wait 5 years until his vision was exemplified. And just to praise him a bit more, he moved then to Trinity Springfield, where he also taught at the Springfield Seminary. But at Springfield, they did things totally different than in Milwaukee. And I want to read what Friedrich Lechner actually wrote when he got there and how disappointed you can sense after 26 years in Milwaukee having introduced this. This is what he says in his New Paris. After 26 years of service at one of our old congregations, that is Trinity Milwaukee, which was not only advanced in knowledge, but also richly appointed liturgically, I was installed in a congregation that was not yet fully ripe for the old liturgy, so that even chanting at the altar had to be dispensed with for a time, although I was unable, in the context of the divine service in the congregation, to demonstrate to my students all that I gave them in liturgical instruction, I was able to some extent to show them by my example that and how a Lutheran preacher seeks to emphasize a good sermon and can, when it comes to proper forms with respect even to liturgical matters, be patient for a time. And while having great love for the old liturgy and all enthusiasm for it, it is still possible by God's grace to say with Paul in this respect, I can face both abundance and need through him who strengthens me, even Christ. I think that really exemplifies his life. I mean, he was a liturgist, he was a hymnologist, he was very forward-thinking, but he was also pastoral. He knew how to meet his people where they were and what they needed.
Yeah, the comparison of the examples that you give in the book are just fantastic. Of the congregation in Milwaukee and the congregation in Missouri, and both trying to accomplish something, but one is, as you pointed out, very pastoral, takes the time to teach the importance of why we're singing this way, why we go about the liturgy this way, why we go about what we do as a congregation, taking the time to teach and catechize versus the other example. Now, granted, I'm sure for the sake of the book, very simplified version of the story, but in this example, it doesn't sound like there was much time spent teaching, but rather much time spent trying to convince people that we need to make this change and that this is the right change. But there wasn't, it doesn't sound like there was much catechizing or teaching. Obviously, I wasn't there, so I don't know.
And I would say it's a very top-down approach. If you,
yes,
you just declare that it's going to be something and go through the motions that it was the congregation's idea, it's not going to work. But Lochner taught, and he eventually taught the congregation to where they thought that it was a great idea to sing these hymns. And they really kind of thought it was their idea. They forgot who had the idea. And to me, that's a characteristic of a great leader.
Well, and it sounds like there was a great partnership between Lochner and Dietz as well. You know, when Pastor and Cantor work closely together, and the congregation sees that great partnership, that harmony there, unison, I should say, and I didn't see that in the example of the other congregation where the pastor was very for this new type of singing, but the cantor was not. And the cantor, I believe in the story that you shared, was willing to change if the congregation voted, and that wasn't happening. So yeah, the pastor then just tries to get signatures from some of the members of the congregation and make it happen that way rather than spending the time teaching. Man, what
a story. I think, too, Lochner realized he needed a competent church musician. He could not do it himself. So he had to delegate his authority to this musician to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish. And that's a real trait of a good leader, a good pastor. And you see, it was successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Great history. I highly recommend this book, Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847 to 1947, from Concordia Publishing House. The whole time I was reading it, I kept thinking, oh, I need to send this to someone else. I just kept sending links out to friends like, you need to read this. You need, this is a great book. So I highly encourage it. And I hope we can talk more about this topic in the future. Benjamin, thanks so much for spending time with us on the series. Fantastic book. Thanks for being our guest for the series.
Thanks for having me. I always have a great time.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.